Hey, serious privacy enthusiasts. Ready to ace your AI data privacy game?
Oh, you bet, Kay. Dive into the world of TrustArc's Nemity Research, your go-to for staying on top of regulatory developments in AI and privacy.
Seriously, Nemity Research maintains a massive privacy and regulatory database featuring expert guidance and analysis from legal and privacy pros.
So save time on privacy research, cut your compliance timeline, and reduce costs with Nemity Research.
Get your regulatory research and insights at your fingertips with a free trial.
So get ahead in privacy compliance and start that free trial today. Go to trustarc.com/nimity-free-trial. Suddenly, the world came to an almost complete standstill. What few expected to happen in these modern times of continuous global travel and interconnectedness did happen after all. COVID-19, or the coronavirus, has caused governments to close national borders, issue shelter-at-home warnings, and cancel public and private gatherings and events. With hundreds of millions of people working from home around the world and ever-increasing data collections, especially health data, questions are raised about the impact of all of these measures on our privacy. My name is Paul Breitbart.
And I am Kay Royal, and this is Serious Privacy.
This week's episode comes in two parts, and rest assured we don't expect to make this a regular thing, but there is so much to discuss this week that Kay and I invited multiple guests to speak with us and provide you with as much background as possible on employee privacy, the use of healthcare data, the guidance from regulators, and more. So we speak to Cameron Ivey and Gabe Gums from Spirion, with Lindsay Palmer from TrustArc's own research team, and with the German Federal Data Protection Commissioner, Ulrich Kerber. Enjoy the episodes!
Today we have the pleasure to follow up on a podcast that I was a guest on, Privacy Please by Spirion. So if you're looking for a privacy podcast, please go find that one. So today I have the pleasure of bringing you Cameron Ivey and Gabe, do you like Gabriel or Gabe?
Either one's good, actually. I don't have a firm preference. Most folks just call me Gabe, but you know, once in a while, a Gabriel gets thrown out there and I'm good either way.
I love it. So Gabe Gums, he is the Chief Innovation Officer, I believe. And then Cameron is the head of everything miraculous for sales and marketing, is my impression.
I'll take it.
He is now.
Yeah. Thanks, Kay.
Love it. So my pleasure. So the most important thing we have about introductions is the unexpected question. And I do this with all of our podcasts. I don't usually tell the guests what the question is in advance, but Cameron may have gotten a little bit of a peek at it. So I'm going to ask Gabe and Cameron. I'll go to Gabe first, then Cameron. Are you a snow person or snow baby or a sun baby?
Oh, well, that's easy for me. I was born and raised on a tropical island. I'm sun baby all the way. I lived in New York for 25 years, so I was forced to be a snow baby. But I have since found warmer weather once again.
Awesome. Cameron?
Definitely a sun baby. I was born in Orlando. So
nice. See, I'm right there with y'all. I'm a sun baby all the way. I've never even been in snow that was deep enough to like cover your whole shoe. And I'm good with
You're
that.
You're missing out, Kay. You're really missing out. Coming from the Netherlands, you should say I'm a rain baby because we are used to more rain than sun or snow. We haven't seen snow this winter at all. But I actually like both. I like snow and winter, real white, thick snow, really nice, and go skiing every year. But I'm also very much enjoying the sun as long as it doesn't get too hot.
So let's get to the really important topic here. We're going to continue talking about privacy issues around the coronavirus and COVID-19 that we're starting to see worldwide. I think I went to bed last night with the news that the United States has now even surpassed China in the number of coronavirus cases, which is a little depressing, but I think it also shows us how fast this is moving. And everyone's trying to accustom themselves to the new norm right now. And people are getting really tired of being isolated. People that are not comfortable working from home are getting tired of working from home. People that are extroverts are tired of being secluded. So what does that look like in the work environment? And I'm going to go past the privacy concerns and say, what can we also do in order to manage this new norm that we're under for the next little while? Cameron, you were going to speak to the topic.
in these times, I think we're extremely fortunate to have the technology that we do have at our fingertips. I mean, a lot of people could probably work from their smartphone if they really needed to. So in these times, I think it's always good to just use video, use pictures, use social media for your work, especially if you're in sales, if you're communicating with people, customers, utilizing that and just really over-exaggerating with it. I think people are starting to do that, and companies that weren't even using social media are using it now because they have to. And I think it's actually going to help businesses, as weird as that sounds, but it's almost just making the world come together virtually, since we're so fortunate to have those technologies at our fingertips. And it's pretty cool to see everybody do that across, you know, the LinkedIn connections that I have and across our company as a whole. Our company has really come together. We did Gabe hosted a game night last night. We had a quarantini. And
I saw that. Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was really awesome. I'll let Gabe kind of touch more onto that, but we kind of tested it out. It was a trivia night, and we did quarantini with drinks, and everything was through Zoom. It was pretty entertaining, to say the least, and hope to have customers and prospects to join us in the future with those. So I don't know, just a really interesting odd times, but just got to stay optimistic and just utilize everything you have. I don't know anything else you want to touch on that, Gabe, but that's just kind of how I feel about it.
I will add the following, because you used the word new normal, and for a significant portion of the workforce, it's actually not that Abby normal, if you would, right? I'd been a remote employee for a large number of years, almost 15, I think. It was also, unfortunately, the byproduct of another tragic incident. So post 9/11, you know, we lost a lot of office space in New York. And so a lot of employees moved to working from home where we could, if we were able to do so, especially those of us in technology.
Oh, wow. Right.
Yeah. It was interesting for a number of reasons, to say the least. I mean, there was the obvious tragedy, but there's always those rippling effects throughout the real world that sometimes we don't really think about. But that caused also a massive work from home shift, a bit more localized, if you would, because it affected that part of the country,
right?
Versus now seeing it everywhere. And I'll say the following terms of norm and new norm, which is, I think we can lean on those of us that have worked from home extensively to learn a lot of the lessons on how one can do so well and productively. And some of those things are keeping your normal routines, you know, getting up at the same time, and but even though you may not have an hour commute any longer, whatever the case is, right? And maybe even now you can use that hour where you would have been commuting to, you know, maybe read or maybe exercise or whatever it is. But staying in bed an extra hour is probably not a good use of that time, right?
And then going to work earlier is not necessarily a good idea. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, since they're up, they go ahead and start working. Don't do that. Stop.
Nailed it. It's absolutely not good. And let me tell you one of the other things I learned when I made that shift from in-office to not in-office back to office. When you're in office, it's kind of natural for folks to be like, hey, you know, let's, you know, go grab a cup of coffee or whatever, you know, take a break, and or, hey, I'm going to run out and grab something to eat. You know, you guys want to do lunch, whatever the case may be. It's really easy to not do that when you work from home. And it's very easy, right, to your point, you know, all right, I'm up at 8, I'm just going to go start working and then do that until, you know, 8 p.m. And while being productive, we need to make sure we're keeping up in this time. We have to stay productive for sure. You don't want that to be at the expense of your well-being, because that employee will ultimately not be productive in the long run too. So those are some good things to keep in mind.
Oh, absolutely. And I love the quarantini idea. I saw that posted on LinkedIn. Our company also did, or my team did, our first happy hour. What did she call it? A virtual toast hour. And it was fantastic. But then I was feeling so good about what we did. And then I saw your post on LinkedIn. I'm like, dadgummit, we could have been playing trivia. I think part of the new norm is coming with a lot of, I'm going to say, what do I call it? It's not privacy issues on data and what you're working with. It's more privacy issues of everyone in your house. There are websites now popping up with how many naked babies are running in the room. My mother interrupted my husband on a call the other day to talk about laundry. Not a bad thing. I mean, this is the new norm. but just something that happens. People coming in the rooms. I mean, we think back a few years ago of the video that went viral of the baby that was crawling in the room while the guy was working. And then the mom comes in to get the baby and she acts like she's hiding from the video. Nobody can see her and everybody sees everything. There's so much of that going on now. But that also means that we may very well, without realizing it, be compromising people's privacy. I mean, you think of the naked baby crawling in the room. I mean, that's a naked baby crawling in the room. What if your spouse or your siblings are walking past the door after getting out of a shower? They're accustomed to living their lives. They're not accustomed to living their lives according to everybody being on video.
Yep. Yep. And one of those things very much is, for those that, again, have not worked from home in the past, being able to successfully carve out space that is just for work. And that is helpful for a number of reasons. The first is very much it allows you to both mentally and emotionally and physically enter and exit a workspace so that you don't also get stressed out and you always feel like you're at work. So that's the first. The second is very much the privacy aspect of it is you are able to separate the privacy of your home life from the privacy that your work life also does require. And many of us, I'm sure, may not work in highly sensitive environments, but you know, once in a while, I may be having a conversation with someone that might be in the defense or something, right? Those are people that are also working from home. So there's privacy in both sides of that fence, but certainly the privacy at home. One of the things that I think folks might want to seriously consider, you mentioned these viral videos and viral images. All of this data is ending up out there for folks to analyze and to put use for their machine learning trainings. And these images and likenesses are forever out in the pool now. And once you pollute the pool,
right,
one doesn't just remove the pollutants from the pool.
Right. Right. So the fact that, you know, all my clients always knew my dogs already. I was a consultant for many years. And so regardless of how much I tried to keep the door shut or anything, the dogs were always in the room, especially if someone knocked on, you know, the outside door with the delivery. Now it's a normal part. Now people are learning everyone's dogs and we're learning everyone's home life. But I think we're learning a lot more about colleagues than we ever wanted to know. You know, I think colleagues knew I had lupus or maybe they heard about it, but now it's a big issue because both my daughters have it as well. And hydroxychloroquine, however you say it, Plaquenil, we just got notified that my daughter can't get refills on her medication because all the Plaquenil is being reserved for people with COVID-19 because it is a potential treatment. And my daughter not only has the lupus I gave her, she's also a healthcare worker. Now, not only is that information out everywhere on the podcast for people listening, but now it's out there for all my colleagues that I work with. You know, just these personal issues you're dealing with at home that you don't intend to happen. So to move off of that one, then the first question I want to ask y'all about, and Paul, please do jump in if you have questions here. We didn't script out anything for this. This is mine and Paul's traditional unscripted privacy that we run with. But there was something that I was thinking about. The digital assistants on our phones, on our computers, in our home, the Alexas, the Google Homes, the Siris, they've always been a problem for privacy. They pick up conversations, we know. But now that you've got people working with sensitive information at home, it's even a bigger worry about having these listening digital assistants picking up what you're saying. Is that something that y'all have worked with before, you've seen, you got recommendations on, other than don't own them?
So I don't personally own one of them. I don't like them even a little bit. I have one device. I'm not even gonna say what type of device it is that has multiple types of functionality, and that has been oh so disabled. I'm just personally not a fan. Now to be fair, I also know that I have devices that already track me, namely that very powerful computer that I keep inside of my pocket, right? Also known as myself.
Exactly.
But so again, when I think about carving out those workspaces, do you need to have an Alexa in your workspace? Do you need to have an Apple TV or whatever in your workspace? The answer is probably no, for a number of reasons. And again, we should be thinking about the privacy of what those devices take away from us. Especially, you bring up a very interesting point. We certainly haven't thought about it. I've only thought about it as a person who's personally vested in privacy. And so I don't participate in some of those activities, but on the professional side of things, we haven't. But it does beg the question, can an employer tell you you're not allowed to have an Alexa inside of your work office? I mean, again, my assumption is if you work in a defense space, they probably can and they probably should tell you that.
At the same time, if you're working from home, it is your home and that is a sanctuary for everybody. Even there is a lot of discussion between data protection authorities and also governments on what measures can be taken and can't be taken in these times of crises. And even the governments say, well, we can recommend that you don't have house parties anymore because it would be insanely, stupidly crazy to have house parties and running the risk of everybody getting sick. But we cannot prohibit it because it is your house. It is your own private place. So would an employer then be able to say, well, you can't have this on the work floor while at the same time probably making you use all kinds of other technology that could be even as intrusive?
It's very true.
Right. And there should be work from home policies. Companies that have remote work employees should have work from home policies. If not, they should consider doing one now. And if that work from home policy, usually it includes things such as use security measures on your devices that hopefully your work is providing and providing the security measures. Includes if you print out paper, it should include a provision, don't print out paper, but let's pretend you have to. You should have a shredder, different things like that. Now, one thing we did is we produced a top 10 tips for work from home employees and a top 10 tips for work from home new companies and a top 10 tips for employers who now have work from home employees. We can make both of those available, but I might bring up a few to ask you about during this as we talk from work from home policies. What do y'all think should be in a work from home policy that would not be considered overly intrusive? Or if it is overly intrusive, as Paul was saying, is it justified under the circumstances?
Okay, before we do that, maybe this is a good time to also listen to an interview that I had earlier this day with the German Federal Commissioner, Ulrich Kelber, because he also has some remarks over on working from home and do's and don'ts, apart from explaining what his data protection authority is doing and providing in terms of guidance to citizens, to companies, and to governments. Joining me now is Professor Ulrich Kelber, the German Federal Commissioner for Data Protection and Freedom of Information. Welcome to the show, Commissioner.
Hi. Busy days.
They are absolutely busy days, and we know that there are lots of questions from companies on what personal data they are allowed to process in light of the corona crisis. But maybe to start off, why is it important in the middle of a crisis to worry about privacy?
We are speaking about very specifically and sensitive personalized data, health data. These are especially protected by the GDPR, a lot of good reasons. So especially ill people are depending on the privacy of this data. And even we have to act swift and with high speed, there are a number of measures from the privacy side. You can always mix with the actions you have to choose for fighting the coronavirus.
So what is the main guidance from the German data protection authorities? I understand that all the commissioners together have provided one single set of guidance.
We are counseling the authorities on the federal level and on the state level in their actions, in the idea to use digital solutions for fighting the virus, the spreading of the virus, and helping people to go back to work some weeks from now. That's the main idea behind that. For better organizing of procedures, of testing facilities, of access to doctors and to hospitals. So this is a lot of work to do, and this is the counseling part, and we are supervising authorities, so we have to have a look on how is data are processed, how are they stored, are they safely stored, are they deleted when the purpose of the processing is done, and things like that.
So what is your main guidance for employers? What kind of data would they be allowed to process in these particular times? Are they, for example, allowed to ask their employees to take health tests on the work floor? Are they allowed to ask visitors to provide any health-related information or make self-declarations?
All personal data gathered in connection with the coronavirus pandemic is considered health data. And health data is particularly sensitive and specifically protected by the GDPR. The independent German federal and state data protection supervisor authorities published a paper on that 2 weeks ago. To give a guidance, there are two corresponding duties. The employer has a duty of care towards his employees, and the employee has a duty to cooperate and to be considerate. So we see the obligation, for example, of an employee to inform his or her employer in the case of an illness when the deceased is subject to a compulsory registration such as the coronavirus.
Okay. And should a colleague fall ill, are employers allowed to share that with their teams?
Our central message for the containment of the spread of the coronavirus in order to protect your employees, data can be collected and used as long as this is done in compliance with data protection rules and as long as there's no infringement of the principles of proportionality. The sharing of names and things like this. Companies are allowed to share these results if it's needed for protecting contact persons. But that is if it's needed for the concrete preventive action.
Okay, that's a very clear guideline. And what kind of recommendations do you have for people that now have to work from home? I think almost all around the world, companies are in lockdown and only vital functions are allowed to travel into work. The rest of us are stuck at home. You and I are speaking now from our respective homes as well. What should we take into account? What should we do and what shouldn't we do?
There are several data protection issues when employees are working from home. On the German side, we gave in the past some recommendations on that in brochures and on our website. These days we are collecting a number of informations from different sources and are publishing that on our website. So in the end of that day, we'll find some more information on that. So employees should make sure to process personal data only with IT and apps that guarantee privacy. Often there are privacy-friendly alternatives to well-known solutions everybody is using on his private IT. Connections via the internet should use a secure virtual private network if possible. And there are even some other very simple methods you can use. Ensure that no one has physical access to the IT you are processing that data. Always lock your IT. Use protection foil for the screen so nobody can spy at it. If possible, lock room if you're leaving your IT unattended. Store personal data on paper, lock it, or just carry it with you around if you have it at home. Encrypt personal data before sending it. Secure all physical documents. And if it's not longer needed, the physical documents, not your IT, use a shredder.
Okay, very helpful. And I think a lot of this should be common sense by now, but it's always good to remind people of what is required.
Maybe I hope people are not doing the same thing if they do when they work in trains. So sometimes when I'm sitting in trains, I can follow all personal data, all small secrets of companies with one guy sitting close to me or just two or three rows ahead. And he's talking about names, about deals, has a clear view on his desk. It's unbelievable that sometimes people don't even care for the least and most easy methods to protect such data.
Absolutely. Maybe as a final point, we see currently a lot of very positive private initiatives, neighborhood groups, political parties, civil society groups collecting data for those people needing help, for example, groceries or dog walking or what have you, and sharing these data also with those offering help. And the same for initiatives helping local shops or restaurants. But often no privacy statements are provided. There is no clarity how data is being treated. How serious is that?
If you're running such initiatives, such help for your neighbors next door in your street, this is simply nice behavior in difficult times, as everybody should act now. Processing data within the circle of your family or friends or neighbors is not relevant in terms of the GDPR here in Europe. By contrast, political parties, civil society organizations, and other organized social movements are under the rule of the GDPR as soon as they start to collect and to process personal data. That means they have to provide information about that process. So they have to inform, especially if this is a digital solution, they have to inform on the website or in the starting of an app about what kind of personal data, personalized data they collect, and which kind of processing is done on that personal data. The GDPR leaves it to the processors how to fulfill their data protection obligation. There is no simple checking. You have to do this, and this is the sentence you have to write down. So the information about the data processing is the most important, and you don't have to do it from scratch. There are a number of blueprints around in the web.
Thank you very much. These were the questions that we wanted to ask you today. So thank you very much for being on the podcast, and good luck with all the further guidance that is undoubtedly required in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, thank you, and take care of yourself.
Thank you very much.
Beautiful.
And that was a fantastic interview. Is that not information that we're looking for to come from a regulator and to know that it is consistent guidance that we're getting out of Europe? So now I'm going to turn it back over to our interview with Cameron and Gabe. We're going to start with the top 10 tips for employers who now have remote workers when they may not have expected it.
So one is a remote work policy, not necessarily the one telling the worker what to do, but a remote work policy. So your thoughts on that? And I think the question was, can you think of things that should be in that policy that wouldn't be overly intrusive, but could be justified under the circumstances? And if so, carry that to the next step. Is that something that would go away once the current circumstances are done?
I think it would not be, and this might be, I don't know how many people would actually want to implement this, but I would certainly want to see it. I think it is not excessive to ask that they do not connect their home machines to networks with IoT devices. Is that too intrusive? I mean, the natural response there becomes, "Then why don't you provide me with a connection I can have?" And I say yes to that. I think if we're going to ask them to work from home, like a lot of employees pay some portion of their work from home employees' internet connection fees right now, I say give them MiFi devices. Give them MiFi devices, let them connect to that as a start. Don't allow them, from both a privacy perspective, as well as employees might have monitoring software on their employees' laptops. Don't put that on the employees' home networks. And more importantly, as an employer, I don't really want to be on your home network. Lord only knows what else happens on your home network. I don't want my machine anywhere near that. Give them a MiFi device. Let them go work from home. I don't think things like that are too intrusive. Your standard acceptable use policies are obviously still in place, right? You know, things that you're not supposed to be doing with company equipment apply no matter where you're working from. Those things, I don't know those need updating any more than that. I think there should be some good common sense, not necessarily policies, but guidelines. I assume most of
and if companies don't have an acceptable use policy, they need to implement one.
You need to implement one like yesterday if you don't have one. Yeah, absolutely. Two yesterdays ago, you should definitely have that.
Well, that's going to be tough for a lot of organizations in the midst of a crisis to also implement all of that and get it done.
You're absolutely right, which is why I use the word guidelines versus policies. There is a legal definition to the two, and although I am not a lawyer, this is a good time to implement some guidelines around those things and what to do while one gets around to actual policy enforcement and policies in particular. So,
and that's a great place to take a quick break, and we can move over to Lindsay to give us an update on regulators and regulations and what's happening in the law.
Joining us now is Lindsay Palmer, who is one of the awesome members of the TrustArc research team. Our research team keeps track of all the global privacy and data protection developments around the world on a daily basis and feeds that into the legal databases that are part of our product. We won't talk about product now, but what I really want to do is hear from Lindsay and let give you the occasion to hear from Lindsay about the work that the team has been doing to highlight all the guidance from data protection authorities on COVID-19, on the coronavirus, what to do, what data can be collected, and how all that is done. So that is why we're speaking to Lindsay now. Lindsay, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Paul.
Welcome, Lindsay. And would you mind introducing yourself real quick? Because yesterday we did a webinar on updates to U.S. regulatory law, and I did not realize that Christina, part of the research team, was a librarian, not an attorney. So there's much more about y'all I have to learn.
Sure. Well, my name is Lindsay Palmer. I have a background in history and political science. That's where I did my majors in university. I started my privacy career in one of Canada's leading financial institutions, which is an insurance company. And I started in the privacy office there for the business units. And from there, I got my IAPP certification. And pretty much on day two of being certified, I applied to NIMIDI because I really wanted my focus to be just on privacy and stepping a little bit away from the actual business unit interactions. And so I've been with NIMIDI for about 4 years and now have transitioned to the TrustArc team.
Oh, that is fantastic and welcome. So you may or may not know that when guests introduce themselves, I always ask an unexpected personal question.
Yes.
So the question for this series is going to be, are you a snow baby or a sun baby?
Oh, I'm a snow baby. I was born in the fall. I learned to drive in the fall and winter. All the sports that I play are winter-based. All the sports that I watch are winter-based. I absolutely love the cold. I love sweaters and coats. I love playing in the snow. My husband and I vacation on purpose up north in the winter, so I'm a snow baby.
Well, you know my rule for coming to Toronto is not during the snow, right?
Yes.
Okay, Lindsay, I already mentioned the research team has done a lot of work in trying to make accessible and understandable all the guidance from data protection authorities around the world. Can you give us an idea of the volume of work that has been done in the past 2 weeks?
Yes. So every day we collect references from leading authorities such as data protection authorities, courts, financial regulators, any other type of regulator, and we sift through them to see where there's important guidance for organizations. We then write references on those. So far there has been about 40 or 50 at least. And we've been taking that guidance and breaking it down into a more usable format for customers to understand what the focus is of these guidance documents and what they need to be doing. So for instance, a lot of the focus right now is on what employers can do to protect their employees under health and safety regulations that they are obliged to under labor laws. So can they collect health data from their employees and visitors? What can they do with that information? What is the extent of that collection? When they need to disclose to public health authorities or just disclose to the workforce in general? So it's a lot of volume. It's a very fluid situation. Sometimes guidance will change from day to day from a specific regulatory authority. So just really keeping on top of that, and we've made COVID-19 our priority as far as the content that we're looking at.
That's great. And what are the common trends that you see on data collection and data sharing? Do regulators give room for maneuver here to companies, or do they remain very strict?
It does vary by jurisdiction. In Europe, for instance, the data protection authorities want to make it clear that they understand that employers have a legal obligation under health and safety regulations, and they don't want data protection laws to come into interference with that. So they are trying to be very flexible, giving sometimes very general guidance and allowing employers to use that flexibility. Other times it's a little bit more specific. The focus is on collection of health data, which is a special category data in Europe. So there are only certain legal bases that an employer can rely on, such as like public interest, public health and safety, a legal obligation. So just they've been trying to give guidance under those specifically, focusing on what type of information can be collected, again, only in the context of where you're trying to protect your workforce. such as, is somebody recently returned from an infected area? Do they have themselves or a loved one been infected recently? Can they collect body temperatures? Can they collect other types of things, like if an employee has a runny nose or a cough, is that something that can be collected and documented? Some of the data protection authorities are kind, they're saying that we do understand you have a legal obligation under labor law, and those labor laws will sometimes specifically say you can collect X, Y, Z. However, once that information is documented and put into a filing system, that's where the data protection law kicks in. And so now you have to follow the data protection guidelines. So the focus has really been on collecting health data from employees and visitors. Also, the focus is on what they can disclose to the workforce. So can an employer tell other employees that one employee might have been infected or visited an infected area? Generally, the answer is yes, you can. Most jurisdictions say do not release the identity of the infected employee. However, if for any reason you need to, again, for some sort of obligation that you have, to only disclose as little information as possible. Some of the data protection authorities are also starting to focus on what the risks would be to that type of disclosure, such as embarrassment, stigmatization, finger pointing, discrimination. So they really want employers to know, yes, there's flexibility here for you. However, keep in mind there are risks involved when you are exercising your discretion.
Lindsay, do you see any need in the guidance for immediate impact assessment, risk assessments, things like that?
Some of the data protection authorities are saying before you disclose or collect certain health information, you do need to do some sort of risk assessment, whether that be a DPIA or some other type of risk assessment. Again, taking into consideration the risks I just mentioned, and whether there is a real need for people to know the health data of other people. That's been the most of the extent. The other type of risk assessment guidance we're seeing involves security and work from home. Especially in the United States, we see a lot of regulators exercising discretion over enforcement and allowing certain sectors to work from home when normally they would not be allowed to. For instance, if it's a financially regulated sector, they usually have to perform their transactions in a licensed office. And so we're seeing discretion there as well, but it will be based on a risk assessment.
Do you see any particular guidance on working from home, or is it too soon for that?
We do see particular guidance. There's been some regulators have been warning establishments that there will be an increase in cybersecurity events with work from home. One of the problems or concerns is once employees are out of the workplace environment, they may become distracted. They just are out of that mindset of security or privacy. And so they might become a little more lax in their day-to-day interactions. And so this is a perfect opportunity for hackers and cyber criminals to start taking advantage of that, such as through phishing campaigns. Also, they're talking a lot about the things that employers or organizations have to do to secure their network. So make sure that everybody has the right passwords, you are only allowing the appropriate access to certain networks, especially those that include personal information. Those are the types of things from work from home. That stuff is starting to build right now, but the initial focus was more on privacy, and now we're starting to see more of the security stuff.
That's great to hear. This is extremely valuable as an update on what's going on. If people are looking for more detail, where would they find it?
More detail, they could find it, of course, through TrustArc Nimity Tools. They could also find it through any of their regulators. There's guidance up on most regulators' sites that includes data protection authorities, financial regulators, government officials in the United States, for instance, and then anything on public health authority websites. They can find a lot of this guidance. That's where we are tracking a lot of this guidance from.
That's great to hear. And I also want to do a shout out to the Future of Privacy Forum, who is collecting a lot of links to older resources in a public document that you will be able to find online via their website.
And we will provide that link in the description of our podcast to make sure y'all have it readily available.
And that concludes part one of our special COVID-19 episode. The second part will automatically appear in your podcast application, or if you are listening via the website, at trustark.com on the Sirius Privacy webpage. Please let us know if you have any questions for us. You will easily find Kay or myself on social media, or send us an email via seriousprivacy@trustark.com, because we really appreciate your feedback. For now, thank you for listening, and talk to you soon. Hey listeners, looking to navigate the realm of responsible AI data privacy governance? Well, look no further.
Absolutely. TrustArc is paving the way, offering a complete approach to managing privacy risks in the world of AI.
TrustArc allows organizations to confidently use AI with personal or sensitive data, moving forward efficiently and cost-effectively.
And here's the kicker. Protect your company and data with TrustArc's privacy-driven compliance software.
Because their deep automation streamlines data privacy governance, cutting your time to compliance with automated data mapping, risk assessments, and regulatory reporting.
TrustArc's enhancements go way beyond that, helping organizations understand AI better and align cross-functionally on data governance, privacy, and security.
Plus, they provide guidance on privacy governance for AI and how to mitigate risks using frameworks like NIST AI, OECD AI, and the NIMACY Privacy Management Accountability Framework.
If you're aiming for compliance excellence, check out Privacy Central, seriously one of my best parts. It uses automation and privacy expertise to understand your requirements, build and manage your privacy program with ease.
Oh, I agree. Privacy Central is your go-to to measure your progress toward responsible AI data compliance.
Stay ahead with TrustArc's Privacy Central. Visit TrustArc.com now. Ask me and Paul if you have any questions.